Hello, welcome to this podcast episode. I'm Eloise, and today we are going to be discussing female perpetrators of the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. We hope that this will aid you, teachers, in your teaching of the Holocaust within the curriculum. This podcast should provide you with some alternative examples that you can use to explain to students how this atrocity occurred and how it played into the wider German society. We have three experts here with us today to talk about some specific themes within this topic. We have Abby, Anya, and Jasmine. Why don't you each tell us a little bit about what you're here to talk about?
Good afternoon, Eloise. I'm Anya, and thank you very much for involving me within this discussion. I will focus on the involvement of female nurses in the Nazi euthanasia centres established in the later years of the regime.
Hi, I'm Jasmine, and I'm here to talk to you about female concentration camp guards.
Hi, I'm Abby, and I'm here to talk more generally about female Nazis in the political sphere.
As I'm sure you listeners are aware, the Holocaust was the systematic murder of Jews between 1941 and 1945. The genocide spanned across German-occupied Europe, resulting in the death of around 6 million Jews. The atrocity also consisted of the murder and persecution of other marginalised groups, such as disabled people and the LGBTQ plus community. Whilst the final solution was conspired by high-ranking male officials of the Nazi Party, women cannot be considered innocent within this event. However, foundational literature has neglected this idea. For example, Hilberg, in his 1961 book, The Destruction of the European Jews, focuses significantly on the bureaucracy and doesn't emphasise women as active agents. In his examination of the mechanisms of the genocide, he reflects on how ordinary citizens coped their actions as a part of the final solution. However, he makes very little direct reference to women, instead discussing male camp guards and those with other roles. Hilberg's book is considered to be part of the foundational literature on the Holocaust, and thus its influence cannot be understated. However, we want to emphasise his lack of discussion on female perpetrators. The work still has influence on teaching and historical conversation today, but we instead want to bring in alternative historiography. For example, Susanna Heschel, in her essay, Does Atrocity Have a Gender? Feminist Interpretations of Women in the SS, examines how women played a role in the Holocaust. Writing nearly 50 years after Hilberg, Heschel takes an alternative perspective and does in fact place responsibility on the shoulders of women in Nazi Germany. Those who played active parts, specifically as camp guards and nurses, she argues, did exhibit influence and some degree of autonomy. Heschel discusses the inadequacy of previous literature in explaining women's violence, and she attempts to undo the existing gender narratives. She also makes note of the historiographical issues that may point to why so much misinformation and misunderstanding has occurred. Her main point is that there is a lack of evidence due to the small number of women who were tried after the Holocaust. This means that, compared to male guards, little evidence was exposed and brought to light about the brutality that women performed. Despite the importance of this discussion in presenting a comprehensive view of the Holocaust, we do not want this topic to outweigh the responsibility of men. Women were oppressed under the Nazi regime, and thus the degree of their autonomy and agency should be considered. They had less concrete influence over the political realm, and thus we cannot and should not place them at the same level of agency as white, wealthy Nazi men. Furthermore, the sexualization they faced during and after the Holocaust, specifically in the role of camp guards, is a concern for us in this discussion. Women should not be subjected to this regardless of their actions. Therefore, in this podcast, their gender should remain, to some degree, separate from their brutality. Now we're going to introduce Anya, who's going to give us some insight into female nurses under the Nazi regime.
Thank you, Eloise. As stated earlier, I would like to provide some information regarding female nurses who worked in Nazi euthanasia centres. These women are particularly interesting to research, as their role in the murders directly counteracts the common view of women in Nazi Germany as passive actors in a male-dominated society. It is this passive role which is currently taught in the majority of secondary schools and has perhaps led to the lack of historical research regarding this topic. However, before involving myself too firmly within historical debate, I would like to provide some general background knowledge. People who are regarded as others within the Third Reich, namely disabled and mentally ill people, were sent to euthanasia centres where nurses murdered them using a variety of tactics. Multiple women were used for each murder, both to help in making the action easier to commit and also to help with the guilt process. Now, what is interesting with these nurses is that they were often not members of the Nazi Party. Instead, they were taken from orders like the Red Cross or other religious groups. This religious element is important to consider when aiming to understand the nurses' reaction to their crimes. Many used their religion as an excuse for their actions, believing they had committed an act of mercy.
It's hard to understand how they thought this could be acceptable.
Yes. While it is shocking to modern listeners, this idea of a mercy killing appears to affirm historian Tobias Jerzak's research into the development of a master race ideology within Nazi Germany. We can see this with the genuine belief held by these nurses that they had not committed a crime. Now, I would like to place this discussion back within the context of wider historical debate. As stated previously, the overwhelming research focus on women in Nazi Germany highlights their passivity, with a common narrative emerging of female victims within an overwhelmingly sexist Nazi state. This narrative is one pushed by historian Gisela Bock, who has stated that women cannot be found guilty of committing crimes during the period because they were limited within society with their role as wives and mothers. It is no surprise that I find this view highly reductive, and I wish to highlight how it actively ignores the importance of the roles played by female nurses. This view of women as innocent victims is a dangerous one to still be teaching within secondary schools, and explains why better research into the role of women within the Nazi regime is so desperately needed.
Yeah, from our reactions and lack of understanding, it's clear this topic must be taught further.
While conducting my research for this topic, I also discovered a very interesting historical phenomenon. Historian Adelheid von Salden has noted within her own research how much of the scholarship presenting women as victims are often written by feminist scholars, creating a scenario where it is women who are actively downplaying the negative aspects of their own history. It is my belief that this phenomenon links to wider issues in historical discourse. It can be suggested that these scholars are attempting to absolve the crimes committed by women due to an awareness of the misogynistic and sexualized portrayal of women commonly found within historical scholarship. While I have only scratched the surface of these issues and the sexualized portrayal of women, I'm sure will be discussed in more detail later in the podcast, it is interesting that a crucial section of women's history is being downplayed due to greater issues in historical writing. To conclude, I would like to reiterate the importance of understanding the role played by these female nurses within euthanasia centres and the need to include this topic more firmly both in historical research and school curriculums. The passive view of women during the period is highly outdated, and a better understanding of the agency of women needs to be promoted. Thank you very much for listening to me today.
Thank you for that. That was really interesting, especially concerning the religious aspect. I think it's important that we consider these discussions. Next, we're going to talk to Jasmine, who would like to begin the discussion regarding camp guards.
Hi, yeah, so I'm here to talk about female concentration camp guards, otherwise known as the Aufseherinnen. Let's first have a think at how they link to our topic and debate. Similarly to nurses, camp guards are another fascinating example of how women acted as perpetrators in Nazi Germany and more specifically in the Holocaust. Also, they have recently been a talking point on the debate surrounding female agency during this period. Let's first look at who they were. Now, while the majority of concentration camp guards were male, around 10% of total guards were in fact female. The Nazi statistics from January 1945 state a total of 3,508.
I had no idea there were so many.
Yes, well, primarily the recruits were trained and worked at Ravensbrück, which was opened in 1939 as the first SS concentration camp solely for women. Now, what motivated women to become Nazi guards? Well, firstly, it is important to note that most female guards voluntarily signed up for the role. There are obviously multiple reasons that would lead them to do this, such as gaining independence, power, and a good wage. But many historians suggest that women use this as an opportunity to seek liberation from the mother archetype that boxed them into a life based on the three Ks. Whichever way you look at it, there is an element of independent choice that is made, which cannot be overlooked when addressing their responsibility.
Surely the women didn't have the same job as the male camp guards?
Well, obviously, but there were some differences between male and female guards due to Himmler's policy of strict gender separation. While the male guards were official SS members, the women were not granted this rank. Additionally, the female guards were always under the command of a senior male guard, which could indicate a lack of autonomy in their roles. However, seeing them as merely subordinates fails to account for the reality, as female guards had many responsibilities and exercised direct power over the prisoners. A good example of a case study that you could utilise in teaching this topic is Hermine Braunsteiner. She's one of the most famous examples of a female camp guard for multiple reasons, including being significantly violent and becoming the first US citizen to be extradited for war crimes. She was born in Austria and became a guard at Ravensbrück on August 15, 1939. From primary sources such as memoirs and interviews with surviving prisoners, we can see that it was common for female camp guards to be given nicknames. Braunsteiner had a few, with one example being the Stomping Mare. This was most likely down to her habit of kicking and hitting prisoners. Not all female guards were physically violent, but other methods of humiliation and domination were used, such as singing derogatory songs. While they were under strict regulation, both male and female SS guards had a margin of manoeuvre in how they interpreted and enacted rules, and they frequently used it. This opens up discussions on how we approach female agency in situations like this. Now let's take a closer look at the historiographical debates regarding camp guards. From my research, I have found that basically all the scholarship on female camp guards was published after 2008, with some examples being Mylanda Ellis's The Violence of Female Guards in Nazi Concentration Camps in 2015. Additionally, the majority of the secondary work on this topic is done by women.
Yeah, this was something that I found in the research in my area as well.
This aspect of the research clearly needs to be addressed in future work then. A further problem with this topic that needs to be considered when teaching is the sexualisation of these women. Samantha Linares addresses this issue in her 2017 article on the female Nazi, in which she explains that female camp guards were reduced to a sexualized archetype due to the fact that they threatened the Nazi society preferred archetype of women. While this should be avoided as a focus, to avoid inappropriate connotations amongst other things, it is something that needs addressing when deciding how to teach this topic. As you can see, female camp guards can be used to further demonstrate the existence of female perpetrators of the Holocaust, whilst also offering an opportunity for debates regarding agency and responsibility. Thank you.
That was very interesting. I'm shocked that there were some women who were so involved in the brutality within the concentration camps. And again, we need to consider women's agency under the oppression of the Nazi Party. This topic really does not receive enough attention, so thank you for emphasising that. Finally, I think it's important we move on to Abby, who's going to provide us with a general discussion of women within the political sphere of the Nazi regime.
Hi, yes, I'm here to talk about women in the Nazi political sphere, specifically those such as camp secretaries and the wives of SS lieutenants, who had a less direct role compared to camp guards and nurses in Holocaust killings, but were still equally as important in the overall orchestration of the Holocaust. While much is known about the contribution of Nazi men to Holocaust atrocities, in her book Hitler's Furies, German Women in the Nazi Killing Fields, Lois suggests that the Holocaust would not have been possible without participation from a wide spectrum of society. Therefore, with approximately one-third of women, totaling 13 million, actively participating in the Nazi Party, to understand the Holocaust in its entirety, it is essential to address female agency, through which case studies offer a useful insight. The first case study of this section brings us to the disturbing actions of Erna Petri, the wife of SS 2nd Lieutenant Horst Petri. One day, returning home from Lviv, she encountered Jewish children who had escaped a boxcar at the Sachsen train station on their way to imprisonment in one of the many Holocaust concentration camps. Upon finding these children, Erna Petri initially offered them comfort and trust by taking them to her home and providing food. However, she later led them towards a pit in the woods and shot each child one by one. Her justification rested on Nazi orders to shoot all Jewish children found in the countryside. However, later interrogations upon the fall of the Nazi Party reveal Petri's deep-rooted anti-Semitism and desire to prove herself to men by participating in the brutality that was constantly enacted by male Nazis. This tragic story highlights how, just like Nazi men, women were indoctrinated into Nazi ideology, viewing Jews as subhuman and deserving of torture. Our next case study delves into the story of Imgrad Virchner, who captured international attention during her trial last year, where at the remarkable age of 97, she was convicted a two-year sentence for her complicity in the murder of over 10,000 prisoners at the Stutthof concentration camp during World War II. Virchner served as a secretary at Stutthof from 1943 to 1945. Part of her role lent her the responsibility for completing the paperwork required to organise camp operations, including the systematic killing of the thousands of prisoners detained there. With her office being situated close to the camp's gas chambers, crematoriums and gallows, she was undoubtedly aware of the horrifying atrocities faced by prisoners of the Holocaust. Virchner's conviction marked a significant moment as she became the first and possibly last civilian woman in Germany to be held accountable for the crimes committed during the Holocaust, highlighting the underrepresented role of female agency in historical understandings of the Holocaust. Whilst Virchner did not personally engage in the physical acts of violence like camp guards, nurses, and even SS wives such as Erna Petri, her administrative work, along with that of other Nazi secretaries, played a fundamental role in the execution of the Holocaust. Therefore, it is crucial to recognise that without the meticulous organisation carried out by individuals like Virchner, the unprecedented scale of the Holocaust would not have been possible, reinforcing the importance of acknowledging the roles of women in the orchestration of Holocaust atrocities, even when they were not directly involved in physical acts of violence.
Thank you for that, Abby. That was really insightful. And with that, we've come to the end of this discussion. Thank you to all of our panel for joining us today. And thank you to the listeners for supporting this podcast. We hope it has provided you with some new understandings of the Nazi regime and the horrors committed, and that this will aid you in your teaching. For further reading and to find all the resources mentioned today, please refer to the description.